Don't make any noise, Peter. Welcome to Category 5 Community Coffee Break. I'm BP9, and I have Doug on the top left-hand corner on my screen, and I have Peter on the top right-hand corner of my screen, and then I'm over here. So welcome to the Coffee Break. It is Sunday, the 1st of November, 2020, if you can believe that. And yes, we had a hurricane blow through here, and I lost power for 2 days. So that was fun. I'm just boggled that we had a hurricane at end of October. I mean, that just I just can't get my head around that. It's just crazy to me, but it is what it is. That's what happened. I lost all the stuff in my freezers, so I elected to go ahead and leave the freezer off and let it defrost, and it took me a day and a half to complete the defrosting, and I had to do that because there was so much ice all over the cooling elements. That I could hardly get any food in there. But happily, there was nothing major lost, so I'm okay. I was okay with that. Let's see, what else? PinePhone, not much progress there. I still can't connect to CalDAV or CardDAV. I keep checking for updates, and they still have no way of making that work. Talked about the power outage. You remember a couple of weeks ago I talked about that client-server process that I was doing, encrypt and decrypt and all that fun stuff?
Yes.
I never did figure out how to fix that. I still get intermittent errors all the time. I still haven't figured out how to fix it. I even looked at the test harness that they use, you know, the testing, the test code that they use to verify the library. I'm doing exactly the same as what they do. So I don't know how their test harness passes every time, because it doesn't pass. My code doesn't pass every time. So I don't know what the deal is with that. We talked about code coverage last time. Did anyone have any questions about that? Has anyone tried any of that?
No.
Okay. Last week, I think we talked about this. This is a
looks like a DSL filter.
I know that's what it looks like, but it is actually a network to USB-C.
Ah, okay.
Connector, okay. And the reason I got it was to be able to connect up. Ah, there's Solbu. Was to be able to connect up the PinePhone to the internet. Oh, Sobu's gone all retro. He'll be back, I'm sure. So that was the reason I got it. But unfortunately, the PinePhone will not activate this device. So I don't know what the deal is with that.
Oh.
I don't know what's going on with it. It doesn't light up when I plug it up to the PinePhone. Here's Sobu. Hello.
Hey, Sobu.
Hey.
Better late than never. How about that? You know, you're only 5 minutes late, so you're fashionably late. Welcome.
Last week I was an hour late.
Yes, that's true. That is true. So you'll slowly get back into time. I was talking about the power outage that we suffered here, Solbu. We had a hurricane blow through here at the end of November, which just boggles my mind, and I lost power for nearly 2 days. So,
End of October.
What did I say? End of November?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. End of October. Thanks, Peter.
You're rushing things a little bit there, BP9.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe.
He is still remembering the 2 days without power last year.
Well, right. And I did not enjoy having no power for nearly 2 days. That was not fun. Not fun at all.
Now, you're in Indiana, right?
I'm in central USA.
Oh.
So Solbu, I've got here the I don't know whether you've seen this. This is the USB-C to Ethernet connector that I tried to use for the Pine phone. Well, it's nice. Oh, yeah. It works when I plug it up to my regular PC, but it does not work when I plug it up to my
I tell you what it could be.
To my Pine phone.
Gonna make a suggestion.
Which is why I got it. Yeah, go ahead, Peter.
You know, there are 5 wires into it. Only 2 of them are used to connect the signal, and you have to get the right 2 because they have a problem with V2. We have this problem, you know.
You mean this thing?
Yeah, that bit. Yeah, the end of it. Yeah, the end of it.
I'm not about to take it apart to check to
But you understand what I mean, and just a combination. Which one do you use? You know, do you use the left to right one, 2, or do you use the left, right to left, 2 at the end?
I get what you mean. Yeah, I get what you mean. But it works when I plug it up to my regular PC.
But maybe the iPhone's wired up, use a different combination of wires.
Yeah, but I'm not about to disassemble the wires.
But you understand what I'm getting at,
yeah. I guess I'll just have to do SSH over Wi-Fi or something like that. I was hoping to avoid that, but if this thing won't fire up under the Pine phone, there's not much I can do. So I still cannot make CalDAV or CardDAV work on the Pine phone, so I'm not real happy about that. You know, the Pine phone is a great unit. It has, with the SIM card that's in it, it's got better coverage than my regular phone because it's using a different provider, a different telecom provider. Yeah, we talked about that, Peter, right, on Discord. But
did you understand what I was getting at? I was saying BT runs the line, and basically they call the shots as well.
Yeah. Same. Telecom Australia is the same. They lay the wires, so you know they if somebody needs telephone service from a competitor, you know, they can say yeah we treat everybody the same, but they can easily just sort of slow down when they have to install a competitor's
product. Did you get the comment about dial up a few years ago down in
again? Australia was the same. I don't know if there's anybody. There may well be. I'm sure there are even rural areas here in the US that have issues with their telecom. You know, they have to dial in. But I don't know that there's that many now. In Australia, they did this thing called NBN, National Broadband Network. The government decided we're going to provide broadband for everybody, and of course, you know what happens when a government-run thing happens. But you know, it gets all balked up, and sure enough, that's what happened. So
then there's that is a little different here in Norway because there is we used to have one phone company that was owned by the state.
Right.
And, in the 90s, it was split up. The market was opened up.
Yes.
And the National Telephone Company was listed on the stock market. They had the condition that still applies. Any competitor who wished to compete on providing phone services, the phone company are legally obliged to sell them access at a fair rate, and the National Watchdog Agency have a few times intervened and said bluntly that the rate is too high, you have to lower it down.
Interesting. Who lays the actual physical wires? Who lays the physical wires to the customer?
Now it's...
is it the same national company?
No, it is the national company was prioritized, but the company still owned the old copper wires. And because they own all the copper wires, and it was the government who paid for the installation of all the copper wires because it was nationalized, the government are dictating what terms they are allowed to have for competitors who wish to use for access. But now when the wireless competitors install wires, fiber wires these days, they can set their own terms. Unless they are a high percentage of the market, then the government will can intervene and dictate what term that they are allowed. They must allow other access to the fiber networks, and at least one or two networks have those terms as of now.
Interesting. So Telecom Australia used to own, it was a government-owned entity back in Australia 30, 40, many years ago now, used to own all of the infrastructure. And then same thing happened, Solbu, as did in Australia, what happened in Norway, from the sounds of it, and that is that all the copper wires that were laid all belonged to Telecom Australia. But as far as I know, even though the network was opened up for competitors to be able to install their own or provide their own services, Telecom Australia still owned all the copper wires and therefore had to provide access to the competitors to allow them to provide the services. To my knowledge, and maybe somebody from Australia can come in and let me know, because it's been several years since I've been there, all of the wires are still maintained, as far as I know, by Telecom Australia, even though there are at least two competitors now who provide services. Nowadays, I think it's the mobile market that tends to get all the market share.
Can I ask you a question? I saw a program yesterday or the other day before television, and they were talking about Australian truckers, and I was like,
Australian what?
Truckers. Are they
truckers? Okay. Yeah. No, it's fine. Yeah.
And they were delivering a school to out the Aborigines out in the outback somewhere.
Sure.
And, yep. And they had to set up a dish with the internet on, and I was quite intrigued. They just pressed the button, obviously it was finding the satellite somewhere. Do you know anything about that? What frequencies operate?
I don't, but I do know that satellite internet is not as good as cable internet, but remember that the continent of Australia is
big.
It's about the size of the continental USA in terms of land space, right? But the population is probably 22 million now. And what's that? The population of New York, right?
You probably live all around the edges of Australia.
That's right. Yep. All the cities are on the coasts, right? They're on the coastal areas, and especially the southeast. That's where the population seems to be centred.
One thing that I find interesting about Australia is that it is the only country that has a road who goes from the north to the south somewhere, I think, where trucks have the right of way at any condition. If they are coming, you have to get off the road because they take almost 2 kilometers to do a hard stop.
Well, you know why? Because of the weight. Those trucks, they're called road trains. There's a prime mover, there's a tractor at the front, and then there can be up to like 4 or 5 trailers behind it.
Yeah.
They call it a road train for a reason. That's because it's so long and so heavy, and that's why it takes so long.
In Norway, we have a...
coming, you better get out of the way because he's not stopping.
because in Norway here we have what the US, I think, they are called big rigs. It is a tractor and one trailer.
Yep.
In Norway, we call that a road train.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Here in the US, we just call them trucks.
Yeah.
But in Australia, you'll have, like, as I said, 4 or 5 trailers behind the tractor. That's a road train in Australia. So
in the US, they can tow 2 trailers in tandem.
Okay. Yeah, I have seen that. I have seen that on the interstate.
I saw a documentary of some. I'm not sure. And maybe it was the in the 90s. There was a show, Rescue 911. It was called. And in one of the episodes, they had one of the accidents that they were talking about. They were meeting one of these truckers. It was a trailer who had, I think, four other trailers attached to it. So it was the front wheel was attached to the point where the trailer normally would be fastened. And he was pulling four additional trucks. In this
slightly fashion. Illegal, I think, in the US, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the rules are, Doug. Do you know for sure? Is it two is the maximum?
Yes, two is the maximum, as far as I know. Right. I don't have a CDL, but I've never seen
one. I was about to say exactly the same. I don't have a CDL either, so I can't tell you.
But I've never seen more than two pulled behind a tractor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this was in the early 90s or maybe even the 80s when they were showing this TV series. So the rules may have changed since then.
Has anyone used NFC, near field communications, at all on their phone?
Yeah. Use near field communications just for non-phone zone.
Okay. I was curious because I've been looking for a way to configure the phone whenever I leave the house and come back to the house or get ready to go to work or whatever. Like when I leave the house, I would like to be able to configure the phone to shut off Wi-Fi, turn off GPS, turn off Bluetooth, you know, whatever I need to do.
And use Tasker.
Use Tasker.
Tasker.
And what does – okay. You want me to say
that's exactly what you're saying.
But how does it? What drives it though?
It's an app you download. It's an app you can get from the Google Play Store.
I get it, but what does? How does Tasker decide when to turn on or turn off? Is it location based?
Well, you program it.
But something has to happen.
You can use GPS. You can use time. You can set it. Whatever way you want. It's very configurable.
Oh, well, I'm going to look into that. It's called Tasker, T-A-S-K-E-R.
Correct.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Appreciate that. Look what I got. I got myself a dinky, tiny little...
A big widescreen.
Yeah. GPS?
No. It's a 7-inch screen. For I've been dealing with CPM on my Model 100. And it needs a VGA input. So something like $30 off of Amazon, and I have a screen.
VGA and a 7-inch screen.
I know.
That's kind of incredible.
You drive it with this. I've shown this before. Right. This is the the serial in on this side. That's the power, and this is the VGA out on the other side.
Yeah. That's that little board you showed us last week.
That's right. Yep. That's right. And then of course it's all driven by CPM on this Model 100.
Right.
Yep. So what I was hoping for was a nice, easy, portable solution, but I don't think that I can do that. Not with all the wires hanging off and all that sort of stuff. I was hoping to sort of attach it all to like a perspex sheet like this. Let the Model 100 sit here, and then attach the base of the screen and the MVT 100 here, but. It's not going to work. It's just not going to be a good portable solution, which is what I was hoping for. So I don't know what I'm going to do about that yet.
It reminds me of one of the Andy Rooney, who used to have the last 3 minutes of 60 Minutes each week. up until he died. In I think it was 20 years ago now. He had
a video that you saw, Solbu.
Yeah, on TV. Back when everyone watched TV.
He's been dead for 20 years.
Yeah, it was in the 90s. He had the point of his talk. The 3-minute talk was portable computers as laptops. But you had to have all this additional stuff in order to first to make it work, and then you have he also wanted to print the stuff. So you have this little laptop on a big bag with all their peripherals and all the cabling.
Yep. There's a fellow by the name of, I think his name is Stuart Chaffee, is his name, and he ran a TV series called The Computer Chronicles.
Yeah.
On PBS, and he also talked about laptops. You can see him on YouTube these days. It's kind of fun
to do that.
It's fun to look at just for the retro computing stuff. It's so much fun.
Yeah, I was particularly fascinated about one of the earlier programs. They were showing CPM. And I didn't
they had Kildall. Was it Kildall? What's his name?
Gary Kildall.
Gary Kildall, thank you.
And I was,
he was a co-host there for a while for digital research.
Yeah, up until he died, he was the co-host for 12 years. Yep. But I think it was in 1954, I think they did that episode. And I didn't know that his operating system, it was multitasking and it was multi-user.
Or at least MPM is. CPM, not so much, but MPM was, absolutely. Yeah. Now, I am curious about how it would have developed if it had stayed around, if Microsoft hadn't shouldered their way in and balked everything up. But I'm curious to see how CPM and MPM would have developed with directories, subdirectories, all that, because you can't, you actually don't have directory support in CPM as it stands, as it stood then, nearly 40 years ago now, and as it stands now, you only have user numbers. You have 16 user numbers ranging from 0 through 15, and that's it. That's all you have in the way of directory support. So
yeah, and the first one or two versions of MS-DOS didn't have folder support either. It was the root.
Really?
And that was it.
I did not know that. Huh. Okay. Wow. You have to be very careful. You still do with CPM. You have to be very careful with the with the directory, because when you build a disk, you specify how many blocks your directory took up on the disk. And if you didn't specify enough blocks, you ran out of directory space before you ran out of space on the disk. I'm having that problem with this Model 100 right now. It's a 4 megabyte floppy disk, and I'm rapidly running out of directory entries well before I ran out of space on the disk itself.
I'll show you later. Okay.
One of the things I did after starting watching the old Computer Chronicle episodes was that I discovered that the host, he appeared once on the Tweet Network's Triangulation. Yeah. And one of the things that they he was on in 2013, and one of the things that he was asked by Leo was the actual story behind what everyone know or think they know what happened when Microsoft got the deal. And the popular story is that he was out flying, but they don't say why he was out flying.
They had a Computer Chronicles show all about that particular episode.
Yeah, but
entire thing.
Yeah, but and even Leo didn't know that what actually happened, because he was he and Gary and the host talked this in private two or three times, and he said that he had when it appeared that the deal wasn't going to happen, or
Yeah.
He realized that he had already promised his wife that he would take her a plane because it was her birthday. And it was more important to him to keep the promise to her than to meet with the IB. And he got the meeting on the next Monday, but by then it was too late. So
interesting. That was not the way it was described in the Computer Chronicles show. But before we talk about that, Peter, what did you want to show us?
I did a video, you probably might not know, and I posted on that measures the that's the unit. I'm going to plug it in a minute if I wanted to, but it measured the full strength of Wi-Fi in dBm, decibels per milliwatt. Nice. And it goes up to 10 gig, and it goes down to about minus 7 to 6 dBm. It's nice. It's very nice. It was good on HF as well.
And, yeah, you posted the link to that YouTube video in Discord, didn't you?
That's the lock amplifier that also I bought. That was a few dollars as well, which is basically a log input amplifier, and then it gives you a DC output to log off of whatever the input is. And the original box, I had a grey box. Which used a Belly Lee plug and just a diode and resistant capacitor to measure field strength for antennas and things. But it wasn't very sensitive, you know. You have to put 400 watts up of the material to get the thing to move anything, you know.
Right.
But that, you just have to tickle it and it goes.
So I will make sure, Peter, to get that YouTube link out of Discord. And I'll make sure it goes in the notes on below on YouTube and on Cat 5 so that they can go. Anyone who's interested can go find it.
It's very useful, yeah. I mean, for all sorts of products and things, you know, I've got quite a lot of ideas for it.
And, is that a kit that somebody could get put together themselves or no?
You buy that and. Okay. And you plug it. You basically buy the thing for $25 or whatever it was.
Okay.
And then you get a leader, a small wee USB lead at the back of it, which you plug in, which it gives you your 5 volts. There's also a blue connector, which is also connected to the USB lead as well. That gives you 5 volts. You can put 5 volts into there. I would use a voltage regulator if you're running from 12 and some sort of protection diode across the regulator to stop the voltage.
Have you heard of the UBEC voltage regulators? Have you ever seen those before?
Yeah.
They're popular in radio control, from what I understand. They're good for drone flying and stuff like that. They're good for reducing your 12 volts down to 5 volts or whatever it is you need. They're adjustable.
I use a low droop one, one where you can run it on a battery. You can almost, if you're using 5 volts output, you can almost run 6 volts input to it, and they still give you 5 volts because it uses a PNP transistor.
All right. Peter, we've got 2 or 3 minutes left. I want to give Doug a chance.
Could I just say one thing? I got the aerial sorted. I got the
aerial
sorted.
Oh, good.
I got that. I got a friend who had a stomach operation, and I thought he'd never do it, you know. Been a bit cynical around here, you know.
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
Yeah, anyway, come in next week. Come in Monday or come sometime.
Good,
next week.
I'm so glad to hear that. Be good to hear you back on the air again.
And the world who did it last time boosted it up. Totally. I think you've done deliberately yourself.
You know.
I get it.
Let's leave it at that, all right?
Sad people.
Doug, it's your turn, sir. We've got about a minute or two left to go. What's been going on in your world?
I don't program. I'm not a programmer. I'm not an electronics tech. So I don't really bring anything like that into this discussion. I just go to work.
Well, for programming, one of the things that I was considering doing for that Model 100 was installing a Z80 CPU so I could run Turbo Pascal. But to be honest, I don't think I'll do that. I think I'll leave the 8085 in there. And I already know, by the way, I'm pretty sure, I think last week we talked about the 8080, 8085, 8086 and all that, and I thought that it was, you know, continual lineage. I'm not sure that's true. So what else has been going on with you, Doug? If not technical, what else? You're back to work though, right? Everything's
yes,
working
I am
fine
back
now.
To work.
Yay!
I am back to work. I wanted to ask you though, your little computer there, your TRS computer.
Yes, sir.
Does that have a serial connection on it?
Oh yeah, it sure does. Yep. Okay. That's what drives. That's the serial connection that drives the. It's the serial connection there that drives the VT100.
What you connect your board to.
Yep.
Is there a possibility of getting a splitter for that so you could connect like a serial hard drive to it?
No, but there is a BCR, a barcode reader port that you can bitbang to actually produce serial output, and that frees up your regular serial port for
So you
for
can
other
connect
IOs.
A serial hard drive to it.
I can, and I don't have it with me right now, but I actually use that already. It's called it's going to sound rude, Peter, so be quiet. It's called a NADS box. NADS box. New age digital storage box. So stop it, Peter. I knew Peter would react like that. So... And what it is it connects to the serial port just like the disk drive does that comes that you can buy with that unit.
Okay.
It uses the serial port, and instead of using a 3.5-inch floppy disk, you use this SD card reader instead. So, yep, that's how it works, and it works like a charm.
So been you can using put it like for, a 256 gigabyte SD card in that, and
absolutely.
You'd have all the memory you wanted.
Well, 256 meg. I don't really need much more than that.
Well, I forgot what you were working with, but yeah.
Yeah, because remember, those disks are only 100K in size.
Right.
They only hold about 100K. So. We're running out of time, folks. Oh, wow. Who'd have known we've been going for 30 minutes already? Did everyone get a chance to talk? That's the important thing. Solbu, I know you did.
Yes, I did.
I'm good.
I'm so glad Good, thanks, Doug. I'm so glad to see you, Solbu, because I know we didn't get to catch up with you last week, so I'm glad you're good. And Peter, same to you. Thank you for fixing your audio, Peter. You did a great job this time around. I appreciate it. And Doug?
The video that you did, Peter, showing off the gadget that you did, the video and audio was excellent.
Yep. That's what I heard. I haven't seen it, but that's what I heard, so... That's why I said, please keep that setup exactly the same for Coffee Break. Please! All right, we're done. Have a great afternoon, everybody, and so glad to catch up. I'm so happy I've got power again. And I will catch up with everybody next week. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.